if you take one thing away from this podcast, standard backup is not fit for purpose. Because if you've got something nasty living in your production environment, we'll just back it up and put it in the backups. And that's exactly what happened to a couple of companies that ended up going bankrupt because their backups were encrypted. But even worse, sometimes backups are dirty. So when there's ransomware, we need to take the data, clean the data, vault the data, and then ensure that I can rehydrate the data at the speed the company needs it to go back to.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the new episode of the InfoSec podcast. We covered some interesting things on the last episode when we spoke about cyber attacks in the Nordics, the new wave of those, and especially ransomware. We're going to continue on this topic, but from a slightly different angle. We're going to focus on the C-suite and board's perspective. I have therefore the honor of introducing today's guest, who is the global C-suite and board advisory lead, and also EMEA cyber strategy lead at Accenture. So a warm welcome to you, Flick March.
Thank you, man. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you. Would you like to give us a short introduction?
Hi, everyone. I'm a lifelong techie, always been passionate around making sure that we secure the world. And what I mean by that is making sure that the impact of outage and attack doesn't affect the human race. And how do we make sure that we can get the world secured, but how do we make sure that the world can continue to function under attack? So that the impact of outage doesn't affect hospitals and airlines and banks, so that we can carry on with our working day.
From your point of view, why is it so important that the C-suite and board are aware of and involved in the security work, do you say?
Do you know, that's a really interesting question. And I think it's vital that people recognize that digital risk and cyber attacks are a business issue now. And this is starting to be seen in many C-suites and boards. It's important for many reasons. One, the truth is when there is a cyber attack, the impact is loss of brand and loss of core purpose, or loss of IP and loss of data. And this causes major impacts to the company as much as many other things that can cause issues to the company. And the responsibility of the board and responsibility of the C-suites and directors is to navigate through risks and ensure that their business model has the future impact that they want. So to make sure that companies can continue to function, cyber has to be the responsibility of the CEO, and they have to have that duty of care to drive the strategy through their senior leadership and ensure there's accountability. For many, many years, a lot of C-suites and boards have assumed that this is a technical problem. And we also see that a lot of CISOs that are reporting up to the C-suite and board, one, don't have a proper place in the C-suite and have a pseudo reporting line into the CIO. But the reporting that comes back from security up into the board is so complex and technical that the board don't understand the implications or what the security team are telling them. So it's vital that the C-suite board feel accountable. It's vital that there's accountability all the way down. It's important that everyone understands their role in security and also understands their role should there be an incident, so that companies can continue to get themselves back to working normally.
Yeah. How about the board in all this? Because as you say, CISOs, CIOs, when they think of security, it could be technical, complex, and so, and boards are generally on a much higher level, talk about corporate strategy and stuff like that. How can they make themselves understood? Is there a problem there in describing what they actually need to know from the C-suite in terms of security?
It's very interesting, Mats, and I was reading a report the other day from one of the big four that said, don't mention cyber to the board, you might frighten them. But if I said to you, I want to be a director, but I don't really understand finance, I would not get the job. Now, I'm not asking the boards to understand cyber, but I think there is a level of misunderstanding what cyber means that is causing a level of confusion at the board. And I'll give you an example of a conversation I had yesterday where I was talking cybersecurity and a gentleman said, I run lots of hospitals. And I'm finding that the younger generation don't mind their data being shared. So do we still have a cybersecurity issue? And it was down to me to explain that cybersecurity is not about sharing personal data, but it is something far more significant. Now, I also run a lot of simulation, education and enablement for boards and C-suites. And when I run board simulation of a company going through an incident such as ransomware, we realize that actually the impact to the whole company is immense. First of all, there's a brand impact, which means your customers are going to find out, your employees are going to find out, and your whole ecosystem of partners and suppliers are also potentially going to find out and be impacted. And when we do the simulations, the realization of what PR or public relations and press and marketing and also what their supply chain needs to do is quite an eye-opener for most of the people in the board. So what we do in Accenture is make sure that we have a persona-based approach. And that means that the CFO understands their role and risk and chief risk officer understands how to quantify and eliminate risks. But also from a CEO perspective and a CMO perspective, they understand what their role is and what they need to do to make sure that they keep smooth running of the company. So big, big, big paradigm shift from stop it being a technical discussion, but bring it into a digital risk discussion and ensure that security is pervasive from the top. It doesn't really matter, Mats, if you're a CEO or a company cleaner, we can all click on that link and we can all do the wrong thing by our company and then cause potential data breaches or even worse, cause an outage of services that would impact their clients.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when you bring in risk to these discussions, that how you view risk on a management level. I mean, if you have been hit by a ransomware attack, a successful one, you see it as a risk. But some discussions, well, it haven't happened before. They see the risk as very small or even impossible. When you talk about roles and training and stuff like that, how can this sort of help management prepare for the future event of a cyber attack?
Now, Mats, I'd like to answer that in two different ways, if I could. I've been in IT since the late 80s, and I remember when the IT industry was towered, and we all loved our towers. I'll give you an example: mainframe, server, end user, cloud, network, edge. And then security is a tower and resilience is a tower, and we all lived happily ever after for roughly 32 years. But with the way things are changing, we're institutionalized. And this is the education at the board level. Nobody really needs to understand the towers, but because we're so institutionalized, the boards and senior executive management teams are being trained on here's how we secure the cloud. Here's how we secure the mainframe. Here's how we've secured the identity. And here's how we do vulnerability management. And everybody believes that they should be talking about it. I had a CEO 2 weeks ago that said, I'm being told about our DDoS attacks. And I said, do you know what a DDoS attack is? He said, no, I don't, but I'm being told about them. Now, if I actually go into the leadership team and say, what are your critical processes to maintain core purpose and integrity? What are your processes? What technology are you reliant on for that process? And how long can you afford it to be disrupted? The answer is very, very limited because we've trained them all in towers and technical towers. But actually, critical processes and critical servers or services, and then the technology reliant on that. If you then understand your business risk appetite, i.e. how long can you afford to be disrupted, and what impact would it have on your brand and your revenue? Then companies can then do proper mitigation rather than tabletop risk calculation of the financial impact, and ensure that they can have abilities to continue to function under attack and under duress. So there isn't a necessary protect, detect, respond, let's all go into crisis and wait for somebody to find out who to recover. And then the other aspect is truly this. We have a situation where you're told to protect your environment. You're told to detect and you're told to respond. But actually the forgotten relative is recover. And the European Central Bank Oversight Committee released a paper that said, actually, response should be under recover because it is a company's responsibility to go from detecting things to recovering and being able to continue to function. Again, putting the onus and focus on how do we get to normal business functions. I work with very large critical infrastructure companies and banks on how do I create a skeleton or a lifeboat environment that allows the world to see me as on, even if I'm not. But we do find a lot of companies, Mats, and I know you do too, that actually assume cyber will focus on all the business processes, or that cyber will do everything and respond packages everything up. But actually, we have to take it more in more detail to make sure that the incident is not closed until everything is back up and running. And with cyber, because we're back into these towered approaches, sometimes there's a slightly myopic view of spend all the money on protect and then run round when there is actually an incident. But that actually doesn't need to happen. And a redesign of architecture and a refocus of critical assets and ensuring you know what you're running on and what you need can eliminate a huge amount of financial loss.
Yeah. And then you also bring in the ecosystem here as a whole, because you have suppliers, for example, critical ones. And we have seen several of these big impacts on organizations here in the Nordics due to supplier breaches. So, totally.
I think you're absolutely right, because you are collateral damage. It truly is. I've seen too many companies where you're relying on a data feed. It's all about data, to be honest, Mats. I know we talk about boxes and tubes and pipes, but actually it's all about data. And if you're reliant on a data feed from someone in your ecosystem and they get taken out, you can imagine the impact that it will have on your business when you're not receiving the data, you're not receiving shipping data, you're not receiving manufacturing data, or actually your supplier can't ship because they've gone down. So it is without a doubt a full ecosystem. And what we do in Accenture is we have the ability to educate and simulate across the ecosystem environments. And we look at things like micro digital twins so that we can map out what is reliant on what to make sure that companies, again, eliminate or significantly minimize the impact. And that doesn't minimize the risk per se. There'll always be bad people and there'll always be cybercrime. But what it does do is make sure that that company and that ecosystem has a structured and strategic approach towards it.
It's about being prepared and to handle these situations. Training will be helpful when you're in a crisis situation. It's stipulated in DORA, for example, that the board should understand cybersecurity risks. This is something new and innovative, I would say. We haven't seen that before. What effect will this have on security as a whole?
I think that's a good question. I like this, yes, because actually a lot of the regulations that are coming in, like DORA, are putting more and more pressure on the responsibility of the company, of the executives of the company, to make sure they understand it. I also am a big believer in muscle memory, and I have seen many stories where there has been more damage through the damage control, because they don't know what to do. So as much as you want to call an expert, there is a psychological embarrassment of companies that try and keep it in-house as well. But I would liken it to calling the emergency services when you've actually had an accident. You do need to bring experts in. Regulations will take it so far. And I'm very keen on some of the regulations coming in. I'm very excited about the EU AI Act because they're putting the security changes around it. But we're also seeing security changing from something psychologically, which was spend an awful lot of money on something that probably won't happen, to let's spend money on something that will protect my brand, protect my revenue, protect my risks, and protect my core service. So in summary, Mats, regulations need to take it a step further, but actually we're now recommending that the C-suite and board do a level of testing and education every quarter and one large simulation a year to then drive that mentality all the way through down the levels of the organization to make sure that if things do happen, and let's face it, Mats, I think we've heard the phrase, it's not a matter of if, but when, way too many years now, we know that it's out there and that individuals are impacted. So it's now time to actually put this in place and embed a duty of care and responsibility to the senior leadership of every single company to ensure that they personally have a seat at the table to make sure that they understand what the implication is, what the risk is, and the reaction to it to make sure that they can steady their company in times of trouble.
I agree. Understanding of the big company risks and the business risks and how to align all this. One thing is investments, because we can invest all our profits, all money into security. Also an area that can be seen as hard. How to measure risk at board level, for example, or at C-suite level. What else is there to assist the top management in doing the right investments in terms of security?
Well, that's very interesting, because I see the amount of money that is put on the individual risks. And the and it makes me chuckle sometimes. They say, I saw one recently that said the supplier had said to the client, we are unable to see your critical servers because they are so old. I am also unable to back up your critical servers because they are so old. And this risk was put into a risk register along with six other risks, all rolled into one on the paper risk register that was shared on an Excel file. And this was a very, very large and important company. So it wasn't just somebody having an old Excel spreadsheet. And they had calculated that this risk impact was $50,000. Brilliant. Fantastic. Okay. Add in something. That was it. It was a risk on the sheet. Until I pointed out that actually, if we look at when I speak to companies, let's use a retailer with a website for a minute, and every day that their website is functioning, they make over 70 million euros a day. So they know for every single minute that their website is not there, that somebody will then have to go to another website and potentially they lose a permanent customer, but they certainly lose that sale. It's very easy to calculate how much money they lose every single minute. Unfortunately, there is a level of maturity of risk quantification that maybe doesn't calculate that financial impact. So what I say to CEOs is, what is your minimum viable company? What is your risk appetite, business risk appetite versus your IT risk stance? And I have some wonderful stories. If we ever go to the pub, I will tell you all about these stories. But I have some that say, Flick, get me back up and running in 5 minutes. Only for me to say, well, the way you have actually structured your data and the way you back up your data is going to take us 3 days to restore it. And even worse, and this is if you take one thing away from this podcast, standard backup is not fit for purpose. Because if you've got something nasty living in your production environment, we'll just back it up and put it in the backups. And that's exactly what happened to a couple of companies that ended up going bankrupt, because their backups were encrypted. But even worse, sometimes backups are dirty. So when there's ransomware, we need to take the data, clean the data, vault the data, and then ensure that I can rehydrate the data at the speed the company needs it to go back to. So it really is important that we have a look at what the assets are and the ability to recover should anything happen, but also ensure that we are protecting against ransomware so that you don't find that when things are taken down and you rely on your backup, only to find they're encrypted as well. So there are a lot of things that they can do, but it's really, I'm simple, Mats, and I like simple approaches. You know how much money you're making on your business process every day, or how much cost you are saving on a business process every day. And you also know what happens to your brand. And I'll give you a couple of statistics. When NotPetya hit in 2017, and I know it's old news now, but 3,000 companies were infected. The White House said it cost the globe $10 billion. Maersk lost 60,000 PCs and 8,000 servers in just under 8 minutes. And I've spoken to Andy Jones over a lovely coffee, who's the ex-CIO who was hauled into the White House after that happened. So to say it doesn't happen is not true. It does happen. And some companies, so Merck lost over 900 million off their share price because of that attack. So there really is real statistical data of the impact that can happen and the weeks or days that can cause disruption in the company. And of course, we've already had our first bankruptcy, TravelX, due to cyber attack. So it's very important that we actually get it back to simple terms, which is, what do I need to continue to do to carry on functioning and then ensure that there is a good response and a good recovery from anything that disrupts a company?
I agree. And if you haven't built any in-depth or preparations for it, you're busted, so to speak, because it will be in a much tougher situation. This is a reality now that it could happen to all companies. So it's something not right in many of these risk discussions, I would say.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah. There was a publication in late 23, which is called The Cyber Resilient CEO, which aimed to test over 1,000 CEOs' knowledge and understanding of cybersecurity. There were some learning points from that. Is there something you would like to mention from your perspective to point out today when we talk about the C-suite and board?
Yeah, the Cyber Resilient CEO is a fantastic read, and it's got a handbook in, and mainly the cyber resilient CEOs that do it well, the 70% of them will make sure they embed it all the way through their overall architecture. And then it goes down to making sure that they've got talent and accountability and technology, definitely the ecosystem of everything that goes in, but also making sure there's a continuous focus on education and enablement. We see some the best cyber resilient CEOs. Their staff believe that they have confidence. 94% believe they're confident in trusting their CEO to be able to talk about it publicly. Like I said before, you can do more damage through the damage control. So to actually have a very strong leader is vital. And then make sure that everybody understands the true meaning of cyber resilience. And the reason I emphasize this, Mats, is that, again, people go back to form and they look at protect and they look at detect. Job done.
Yeah.
But actually, again, when you hear people talking about offensive and red teaming and blue teaming and this impact and that impact, actually, when you ripple it all the way up, it is vital that the senior leadership team understand the real impact to the overall business and to people as well. So I would suggest anyone reads the Cyber Resilient CEO or come and talk to us, and we can take it through and introduce people to companies that have done this well, and then shown the improvements in revenue, the improvements in operational efficiency. And also, let me just touch on budgets again, Mats. A lot of people are going, oh, cybersecurity took 6% of my budget this year, and they now want 8%. And it's just a hole that is constantly needing more and more and more money, and I don't understand why. And that's why it's very important for the cyber resilient CEO. I mean, it's really simple. If we go back to that retailer, they lose $70 billion a day. How much do you want to spend on cybersecurity to make sure that doesn't happen? So it is down to making sure the cyber resilient CEO, she takes or he takes it very, very seriously and then drives those changes in to make it happen.
Yeah. to sum this up out of the things we have talked about today, what are the main things that the C-suite and board advisory should focus on? What's the three most important things they should start on right away?
The three most important things is, number one, education enablement, but for a persona-based education. So make sure the CFO understands in their language and the CMO, because they have thousands of things hitting them. There's a lot more than cyber that's going on in a company. So that's just one very small thing that could potentially take them out. So it's making sure that they work with a company that can do proper training to ensure those people and those roles understand what their duty of care is. And of course, muscle memory practice to make sure everybody understands their role. And teaming events to do that. Number two, challenge your own company is to say, what is the minimum viable company and what are the processes that are essential in the ecosystem and technology they're reliant on for that, and understand if there's that mentality of thinking within the company. And then I'd also ensure that the third one is making sure there's a whole end-to-end capability of how do I get my business process back up and running should there be an impact or should there be an outage. And although this is erring into business resilience, actually, it's not. It's making sure that the cyber attack has been eliminated and the company can continue to function. So ask questions on how quickly can I recover? Or what are the mitigating situations that I've got to allow me to be seen to continue to function, or at least ensure that the basic critical processes are functioning? And I'll give you a very good example. There was a hospital that had a run book, and that run book said, if you leak to the dark web, turn it off until we find out why it's leaking. And unfortunately, they turned that hospital off for 9 days, because it took 9 days for IT to actually resolve the problem, with no realization that hospitals do get into a bit of trouble if their IT systems don't work for 9 days. Because you've got to have access to patient records. And let's face it, we don't use paper records anymore. So in summary, take it very seriously. Work with the experts that really know the stuff. Don't have a closed pool of expertise of the two techies you're hoping are going to do threat intel. Work with large giants that can give you the full understanding of what the situation is. And then I would also say, and I know this is more than three, keep an eye on AI and quantum.
Yeah.
You know, AI and quantum, again, give us our own level of challenges and the security around them. And that's why understanding where security is going in terms of both of those and working with advisors who understand where the next new scary thing is coming from is absolutely essential.
Thank you, Flick, for all the wise words and insights on C-suite and board security from a point of view. Thank you very much for attending the InfoSec podcast. And thank you to all you listeners out there, all feedback we have received from you. So thank you, and I'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks, Vance. Bye-bye.